people ask what Omaha means. It's a run play, but it could be a pass play.
Have that written for them or produce it? Where'd you get that?
Get what?
That Omaha bit.
Oh, I think that was YouTube somewhere. Okay. You don't like it?
Oh, I like it, but it's just I would say production value. That's all.
Oh, well.
I was going to say it was great if you produced it.
Tom Schreier joins us now from 105theticket.com, one of our writers, and he's we're talking to him live from Target Field.
Yep.
But you're talking about the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, it's been a crazy day. I was actually at Vikings at Spielman for a little bit. Me and Sam were there, and then I'm at Target Field now covering the game. We'll be doing Wild practice tomorrow, so it's kind of a fun time of year with all this sports going on.
How's the weather right now? Because we're buried within the balls of Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Is it nice out? Is it coming right now?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, I think all afternoon it's been pretty nice. Obviously, driving over here, I saw a little bit of rain, but haven't heard any word that, you know, the game wouldn't be played or anything like that.
We're going to talk to you a little bit about your article on the Wild, which is titled "Make No Mistake, the Minnesota Wild are winning because of management and leadership." And, you know, one of the things you started it off with this quote from Ryan Suter, which said Minnesota has a lot of good young players that I think will help make this team successful. That was back on the 4th of July, 2012, when they first signed. So obviously they saw the nucleus of something to build and grow with. You know, I don't know. You don't want to say it's come to full fruition, but it's really starting to work its way through. And here we are now with a third straight series with the Chicago Blackhawks, and a team that believes they have the potential to advance again. Can you talk a little bit about what your story really gets to, and about how management has been a key to not only the off ice leadership, but then to the players or the on ice leadership?
Yeah, I mean, I'll never forget that day where my brother actually came out the 4th of July and he goes, yeah, we got him. You know, we got Ryan Suter. And I was like, what are you talking about? I mean, that never happens in Minnesota. And I know that this is home for both those players in some way, in some respect, obviously. But I think that's not the only selling point. The big selling point was what we all couldn't see, which was who's in the minors, who's in the farm system. And obviously, you know, no one knew at that time, you know, who Fletcher would trade for or kind of how those would go down. But that really stood out to me more than home. I think that you can only sell that to a certain extent. It tends to be sold to older players. You think of Torrey Hunter or Kevin Garnett. These are players in their prime, the two biggest free agents at the time. So I just, you know, went back and I found that quote. I remembered both guys. I think it said, Breezy and Suter, it said, hey, you know, this is a team that's really building for the future. And as you alluded to, I mean, it hasn't come to full fruition, but I tried to break it down in the article, and I tried not to get too technical, but I wanted to kind of lay out, looking at the points, depth scoring comes from those young guys, and Parisi talked about that after, you know, they advanced in the series right after that St. Louis game. He said, hey, you know, our second to third year players, you think of your Coils and your Zuckers and guys like that, Marco Scandella, that they've really, you know, kind of come up through the system, either trades or drafted or free agent signing, and they provide that depth. And then they've done a really good job kind of with the older guys as well, you know, going out and getting a guy like Bannock, Jason Palmaville, who I think is more, you know, kind of a leader, even though he doesn't wear a letter. And then, you know, just kind of building around a core, and it just seems like the guy's crazy for sure. I mean, that guy steps up every time that you kind of need him. Suter plays all those minutes. And then the young guys are just coming up, and I think that's the difference. You know, they've played Chicago so many times, but what's the difference this year? It's that, you know, you can kind of rely on Zucker and Coyle and Marco Scandella and these guys to step up and play like NHL players.
Well, when you go to the core of this team, Parisi, Pominville, Koivu, Vanek, I mean, these are all veterans, and you know, Suter as well. Soon to be Marco Scandella, I mean, he's been around for quite some time. I mean, when you really get down to it, these are veteran players who are being supplemented and complemented by the younger players that are making a big difference as far as the offensive production is concerned. You mentioned Pominville not necessarily having a letter on his sweater, but you know, he was the captain in Buffalo before he came here. So you know, you don't necessarily need to have it to be it. And they have a lot of that leadership within this team. Matt Cook, you go down that road. You go all the way through the whole lineup, and they've got a ton of players with experience. What it does, though, is it takes pressure off those younger players to deliver, and when they do, it's in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, Pete, I think if you, and you know this as well as I do, you look at the third defensive pairing. Jordan Leopold, the guy they brought in, and obviously isn't like kind of a leader like Mikko Koivu, who's been around for forever, but I think he has a good influence on Matt Dumba, and I think that, you know, that's a guy I felt like might get eaten alive in the playoffs just because, you know, he's going to make mistakes just being as young as he is, and you obviously want him there on the point, on the power play. He's got a blast. I think he's a guy that, you know, he's very talkative, and I think he brings a lot of young energy, and I know it's kind of a young team, but I think you always like a 20-year-old who comes up with kind of some swagger and stuff like that, and at the same time, it's very respectful, but obviously super talented, and I think there's some refining to do on the defensive end, and he may make critical mistakes. And then you got a guy like Leopold who's watching his back, both kind of, you know, from a mental standpoint as well as physically on the ice. So, yeah, they've done a great job of that. Suter and Brodin or whatever, you know, putting Granlin with Pominville and Parisi all year long, just whether it's on the locker room or the line seat, you know, Yo and his staff and obviously Fletcher, you go up the line there. They've done a good job kind of complementing the youth as well as kind of the young, the young talent as well as the, you know, proven veterans.
Radioactive Sports is rolling through the 6 o'clock hour on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket, along with Ben Holson. I'm Pete Wagner, in for Mike Morris, who's preparing for the big mock draft that's going to be coming up tomorrow. I'm sure you're bated breath on that one, Tom, no question. You're embedded at Target Field right now getting ready to cover the Twins, and we're talking about your most recent piece that appears on 105theticket.com from the corner of cold Omaha as you continue to dissect and break down the Minnesota Wild season as they prepare for the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, from a management perspective, Mike Yeo, he's literally experienced every realm of the spectrum in this market, from the blame game to the credit game to the Adams Trophy finalist type of discussion to everything. With all of that said, where do you put him within your mix of his effectiveness with this team this year?
Yeah, his stock is rising. As you guys know, I've been a little tough on him at times. And, you know, at the same time, I think there's an expectation to win. And I think that that's a hard position for a young coach to be in. I think the cool thing is that I think the Wild were looking at Hitch at the time. And it would have made sense to go from, you know, Todd Richards, who wasn't as experienced, to kind of this older guy, one with the Dallas Stars, very well respected throughout the league. And, you know, they took a risk, and it's always fun when an organization takes a risk, especially when it's kind of worked out. And Yost had to take the brunt, you know, kind of brunt of criticism when I think the team knew, if you take them at their word, that, you know, they just needed a goaltender. They were suffering through the bumps, or, you know, in his first year, that maybe, you know, they had a good start in the first half, but things kind of evened out towards the end. So, you know, I think it's hard for a young coach. I think he's gotten to a point where you can just tell he's kind of confident. I mean, it's kind of funny. You talk about players like that a lot. But with him in the media, I think he's just gotten more confident that, you know, we'll represent him well, and that, you know, there's a little bit of, not gotcha, but a little bit of, hey, you know, listen, you know, I didn't have the goaltender I needed, and, you know, I didn't have this and that. And, you know, I think he's a humble guy. He's always deferred to his players. And I think he can take pride in some ways. He's a big part of why there's, I mean, you really have to stretch to look at guys that haven't panned out in Minnesota. Most of these guys have been handled very well, and he can take pride in saying, hey, I'm sure he's part of the decision-making with Zucker at a time when people are like, well, why isn't this guy up with the team at all times? So his stock is rising. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, as you get farther into the playoffs, you're going to look like a better coach, and sometimes that's not on him. And on the flip side, you know, if you lose repeatedly to the Chicago Blackhawks, he's going to get more of the blame than he deserves. So that's probably the life of the coach a little bit. But I think, I mean, it'd be hard to say that his stock is rising, that he's not a big part of what's going on with the Minnesota Wild right now.
In the postseason, that's when the coaches, the management, scouts, players, so everybody makes their money, because it's about preparation. There's no secrets here. This team knows the Chicago Blackhawks inside and out. They know how these guys handle just about every situation, as do the Blackhawks know exactly what the Minnesota Wild do and how they handle those situations. With the extra time to prepare, and I think Chad Graff wrote a great article in the TwinCities.com to check out about the Wild being very happy to have a little bit of extra time to prepare for the Chicago Blackhawks. Unlike last year, if you recall, came off an emotional Game 7 overtime win against the Colorado Avalanche, propels them into the next round of the Hawks, and it was like, wham, right back on the horse. I think that's a big benefit, not only for the Wild, but the Hawks. They're both in kind of the same position, waiting to get this thing going on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, I think for fans, too, it's fun because it's a chess match, and that's going to be just dissected by guys like us in the media as well as bloggers and, you know, people sitting on the couch at home. But I think, it's fun when you have two, you know, central rivals, two people that know each other. The other thing, too, is that they're both very well-constructed teams, and why I say that is because you've seen this, see the same players, same characters year after year, so there's going to be no surprises. And I think, again, you know, it's going to be under pressure, and so is Chicago's coaching staff, but because you'll know if a mistake was made, all of a sudden a team will make an adjustment. And you know what? It wouldn't blow my mind as much as we talked about that St. Louis series. Oh, these are two closely matched teams that are well defensive, you know, play well defensively. Those games were either way. There was no one goal games. I could see it like this, where these teams know each other and all of a sudden, you know, they see that little crack and they jump on each other. But there's one thing to reassure, you know, Wild fans is that their goalie situation is a little bit tougher than the Wilds. And, sometimes even if a coaching adjustment goes wrong or something like that, a guy like Devin Dubnyk can bail you out. You know, hope you see it again in the next round.
And sometimes they don't. You know, the Minnesota Wild experienced that in Game 4 as well. You know, the one thing that stands out and is something to be considered, too, is Corey Crawford's won a Stanley Cup. Devin Dubnyk has it. I mean, that's one thing to keep in mind. And it's ironic that right now that you would say you would rather have Devin Dubnyk between your pipes based off of what Corey Crawford did in the early stages of that series with Nashville. That who would have ever thought something like that when these two were playing in this league 2-3 years ago? But certainly that is definitely the story. If I were to have one of those three goaltenders, Scott Darling or Corey Crawford, it would be Devin Dubnyk. You cannot win without goaltending in the postseason, and you cannot win without special teams. Tom, enjoy that Twins game. We appreciate your time here today, and get at it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Tom Schreier from Cold Omaha, talking Wild Hockey, Radioactive Sports. Am I taking this out? Radioactive Sports, we'll be back right after this.
This segment brought to you by Burlington. Spring is at Burlington, and the trends are in full bloom. Time to renew your wardrobe for the season. Shop Burlington and save up to 65% off department store prices every day. Burlington, style for everyone.
Feel that? Radioactive Sports, 105 The Ticket.
Welcome back, Radioactive Sports. Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. We bring in Johnny Love, horse racing handicapper, 5 years now for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and also a former professional wrestler. Can you use the word former or still? Is it always in your blood?
It's always in my blood, but it'd be
Seven
rude not
years.
To say former.
7 years. So before we get into the handicapping, the Derby, the Canterbury Park opening up on the 15th of May and what we can look for and what's happening, wanted to touch on the Vern Gagne death. Obviously, when someone has Alzheimer's, you know it's a slow process and you know it's coming. But when it still does, when someone the magnitude of Vern Gagne passes away, it does really impact not only the wrestling community, but also really the fans of Minnesota that were such a great part of that AWA run that he had. And you said you had a great Vern story, Johnny.
Well, I do. I worked for Vern the last year and a half of AWA day. So that was their struggling times. And I was never the main event. I was a first or second wrestler. But for the last 2 weeks, I wrestled Buck Zumhoff. And that was the opening match. And we did our gimmick. And he'd hit me over the head with the radio. But Vern always treated me with respect. He was great. But anyways, probably about 15 years ago, we were at a wedding together, and he was in his 70s at this point. And we were standing talking, and this big kid had a few drinks, said, "Vern, I want you to put me in a sleeper hole." So the kid turns around and has his back towards Vern, and I'm like, uh-oh. And Vern said, "Okay." So Vern puts him in the sleeper hole and just chokes him right out. Oh. Kid goes to the floor. I'm laughing. My wife was a little terrified. So Donna, Vern's daughter, comes right over. She goes, "Dad, why'd you do that?" And he said, "Well, he asked me to." So this big kid's laying on the ground, and you know, he's 50 years younger than Vern, and Vern slaps him like 5 times, and the kid got up, and Vern apologized. But
wow. You know, it was the most honor. The kid's never been happier, I bet, right?
No, probably. I'm sure he told his buddies. That's what everybody does, you know.
It's pretty incredible. The impact he had, not only here, But I think, you know, I was mentioning the Crocketts and the McMahon Seniors and Vern and the people that really were the big promoters of the big three at the time. That really paved the way, really now for what's the big one. But it really was a tremendous time to be a part of it.
Well, it was, and you know, when I was a kid, that was part of our life.
It was.
You know, we sat around the TV. I'd go to my grandma's house and watch it. My grandma and I and my brother would take the 21A bus, go to Civic Center, go to Minneapolis Auditorium through crappy neighborhoods, come back at midnight. Everybody's wrestling on there, smoking cigarettes, and that was a part of our lives.
Yeah, definitely. And we used to have baseball practice at noon every Sunday. And you'd see all these guys wheeling in about 5 minutes late on their bikes because they'd have to stay to see the last match on All-Star Wrestling. So it was definitely a big part of it. So now you're a handicapper in horse racing. How in the world did you get into that?
You know, my wife calls me Mr. Magoo. I kind of walked into it. I was studying horse racing, and then there was an opening. I sent an email in. I never really had a job interview. I didn't have a resume. I sent it in, and then I got an email back from the sports editor. Said, I'd like to talk to you. Had a nice talk. 2 days before the Derby, he called me. He said, congratulations, you got the job. And I was like, wow, I didn't expect that to happen, and it did. And so, yeah, I love it. I mostly do Canterbury, but I do the Triple Crown and the Breeders' Cup also.
So a straight layman here, how in the world do you keep it all straight?
You know what? I get up at 5 o'clock every morning. I love looking at past performances. I love looking at videos. Mm-hmm. And that's my gimmick. I mean, some people have their stuff, their computers do it all for them. There's programs and stuff for that. I'm just an old fashioned guy. I like reading the PPs. If I stay to one track, I do pretty well. You know, in the off season, I play mostly New York tracks. And that's what I do. And that's what I love.
So when this all comes together, first of all, Canterbury Park opens on the 15th. When do you start producing pieces for that?
Well, the PPs will probably come out 4 days before that. So, that Monday I'll start studying. I usually get my stuff in 2 days beforehand. So that Friday, the May 15th, that'll be my first thing for Canterbury. That's always an exciting time. I mean, Canterbury's kicking butt. I mean, they're doing great. Since the Mystic Lake partnership, purses are bigger, attendance are bigger, better horses, better trainers, better jockeys. So it's kind of exciting right now.
Has it been a crescendo? I mean, has it been a slow rise for it? Or I mean, it was pretty rough for a while there, right? It was like, is this thing closing?
I got to be honest with you. When I got hired, I thought it'd be around 2 more years and that's it. And then they did the 10-year partnership with the Mystic Lake Casino, and now it's bigger than ever. And I've been telling people, whether they want to believe me or not, that Canterbury is going to be the best track in the Midwest, and I'll say about 5 years, because they're growing. They're growing, you know, they got an entertainment center going across the track now where the stalls are at. This is a big deal. And you're going to see a lot of better horses coming in.
Better horses, better jockeys, better racing.
Breaking records across the board.
What's it looking like for the Derby? Do you handicap that?
Gosh, yes.
Okay, so what do you have for that?
All right, well, this year's field is probably one of the most talented, fascinating groups we've seen in years. Some people compare it to the field of 2007. And we knew this coming in because the favorites were winning the prep races, and not easily, but they were consistent. They were winning. There was no long shot winner. So we knew we had a solid 3-year-old crop. But with that said, there's two horses that stand out, American Pharoah and Dortmund. They come out of this same barn of Bob Baffert, two different owners. But these are two special horses that we'll get to watch on Saturday, which is kind of like our 2-minute Super Bowl.
For sure.
And this is a big deal. But I think these two horses are going to be tough to beat. American Pharoah will be my number one pick. He's pretty special. I never seen a horse run like he does. He skips across the dirt. He has a lot left. His ears are pricked. He gallops out nicely, and he's always asking for more. So the last two races that he was in, the stake races, the jockey looked like a cardboard cutout, just sitting there. Not using a whip, not being asked. And there's a clocker at Canterbury, at Churchill Downs this weekend. He watched this horse. He said, this is the best horse I've seen in 35 years.
Wow.
This guy is well respected. He's not a rum dum.
He's not throwing it out there.
No, he's been around 40 years.
Yeah.
And a lot of people took notice of that. So it's going to be a good race. There's a lot of speed in the race. We'll see what happens. Crazy stuff happens, you know, in the Derby. He's not a guaranteed lock. I mean, this is the Kentucky Derby.
But you got a 1-2 punch that you really like, and then, right, I mean, that's what I'm hearing. There's, like, one of you like those two out of the
shoot. I do like those two. Dortmund's a beast. Dortmund is a monster, muscle. You know, I compare him to Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran, you know?
Oh, nice.
You know, American Feral is slick, quick, fast. But then you have the Roberto Duran Dortmund type. Macho, wants to fight.
Tough
He'll
guy.
Fight you all the way.
Yeah.
And that's what it's like between these two. You know, Bob Baffert's not going to send both of them. They both have great early speed. I think American Feral's going to take the lead. But what you're going to see is all these horses, you know, somewhere along the line, someone's going to have to say, all right, let's go after this horse. I think you're going to see a lot of tired horses down the stretch, and that's when your closers are going to come in. And that's where you're trying to get your prices on your tickets.
Is there anybody else in there that you see that will be getting up into that finishing range that might be longer shots that you could help people with here?
Yeah, you know, that stretch run to me, I think, is going to look like a bunch of drunken sailors coming home. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see these closers picking up the pieces. I think International Star is a great horse. He's smaller. He won the Louisiana Derby by running from far back, and he kind of maneuvered his way through traffic. I think he's going to be a nice price, 10 to 15 to 1. I think there's Danzig Moon. I think he has a nice shot coming from far back. I think you're going to get 20 to 25 to 1 with him.
Wow. Well, that's great. So now, if I'm here and I want to play in, do I head to Canterbury? Is
you
that
head
what
to
I
Canterbury,
do?
Yeah. They get a good crowd that day, too. I would first pick up the paper and see who I like.
Absolutely. Is that the Thursday paper?
That'll be Saturday morning.
Saturday, okay.
So I'll write my analysis, and then I'll put in my tickets. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't really do it yet because the post positions will be announced tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'm not, you know, if American Feral gets the number one post, that's the worst post there is. There hasn't been a winner there since War Admiral in 1937. So with that said, you know, I got to wait till those come out. But it'll be in Saturday's paper. And usually my tickets around $100.
Okay, so pick that up, get out to Canterbury, and you're expecting a good crowd. It's a great time.
Great.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun out there.
Johnny, thanks a lot for joining us here today. Johnny Love, he's a horse racing handicapper. You can see his work in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. He's in his fifth year of doing it. He knows what he's doing. This Saturday's paper, check out his work. Get involved with the Kentucky Derby. I know we all can't wait. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
Phil Pritchard, keeper of the Stanley Cup, next on Radioactive Sports.
You're listening to 105 The Ticket. Back to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson.
Radioactive Sports continues on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. Along with Ben Holson, I'm Pete Wagner. In for Mike Morris. What is it, Tuesday now already? This is just flying around here. I can't believe it. This Tuesday evening, we have a special guest here, Phil Pritchard. He's got a job that I think every hockey fan, every hockey nut would love to have. He is the keeper of the Stanley Cup. Ben Holson reached out to him yesterday, and he is now on the show. And we would love nothing more than to welcome you in, Phil. Thanks for joining us here tonight.
Hey, it's always a pleasure.
So, obviously, you've got this job, which, you know, everybody knows you as the guy with the flowing blonde hair and the gloves, right? And it's just perfect. You've got flow, you've got the gloves, and you've got the cup. Can you just tell our listeners how you came about this job that you have?
Well, first of all, I wish it was blonde hair. It's kind of gray. I've been doing it a while.
Hey, I'm still calling it blonde. It's
okay,
all good.
Fair enough. I've been doing it a while. I started in 1988. But you know what? I took a sports administration course at college, and part of the deal was a co-op program. My co-op was with the Canadian Hockey League, which is the junior hockey league, which mm-hmm. a lot of the guys go on to the NHL. And my boss at the time there was on the board at the Hockey Hall of Fame and thought I might be a good fit there. Another guy that was at the CHL at the time had gone on to the Hall of Fame as well, so we had a good fitting there. And it was funny, my first week on the job at the Hall of Fame, the Stanley Cup had to go up to a minor hockey tournament north of Toronto, and nobody really said anything about going, and I kind of said, sure, I'd love to take it up, and so I put my hand up. Next week, I put my hand up again, and that was, like I said, 27 years ago now, and I'm still putting my hand up. However, I would trade it in a second to win that thing.
You know, there's a lot of truth to that. Obviously, you grew up playing hockey, correct?
Yep.
And
trying to play.
Of course. I mean, I think we all can say that, but you're right next to the sheer joy that the NHL player, world-class athletes have at winning the hardest trophy to win in pro sports. What is, when you're on the ice and the crowd's going nuts, even if it's a road crowd, because it's just the aura of the Stanley Cup, but what is the feeling like from the players when they win that cup?
Well, you know what? It's amazing. You hit it right on there. The red carpet gets rolled out. Craig Campbell and myself get the privilege to walk it out every year. And regardless whether it's a home team win or a road team win, the fans in the audience are seeing something spectacular. It's the world's greatest sports trophy. We walk it out. Commissioner Bettman hands it to the captain, and we're literally within, I don't know, 5 feet, maybe 6 feet of the guy when he hoists it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the celebration begins, and you see the joy and the admiration. You see the relief. You see every emotion going on these guys, their families, the coaching staff, as they parade it around the ice. And then you get to meet them as a person in the dressing room shortly afterwards as they start their summer with Stanley celebrations. And it's always a great summer, but to see these guys, that it's arguably their greatest moment in their professional life, winning that cup, and to be part of it with them, it's pretty neat. But like I said, and like you said earlier, everyone would rather win it. But this is an okay second, I guess.
I can remember when I was probably about 11 years old, that's all I ever wanted to do is not, you know, forget it. I was convinced I was playing in the NHL, right? but to win it. Then you turn 15 and you look around, you go, I ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
But to win it. And you know, I can think back to all of the old Sports Illustrated articles and the covers of the magazines. And they all had a very distinct, there's one image I remember the most, and that was of Bob Gainey with the separated shoulder when he got the Conn Smythe against the New York Rangers in 1979. It was iconic. He could barely get the thing up because his shoulder was so bad. And there's images like that, I think, that surround every hockey fan with an understanding of what it is, what the passion means. And you know what's cool about it, Phil, is I don't think that people really, I don't care how many people get it. What matters to people like myself and hockey fans is that we get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you think of, first of all, there's 75 countries around the world now that play hockey. Everyone that puts on a pair of skates and picks up a stick wants to play in the greatest league in the world, the National Hockey League, and they want to lift the greatest trophy in sport. All the players get it, their family gets it, their fans get it. And if you're new to the game, as you were saying, you might not get it at first, but once you watch it and you see the passion these guys have, you see the passion the fans have, you see the respect they have. I mean, here we are just finishing the first round. They go through everything, and then the game finishes, and they shake hands with one another. Like, there's nothing else in the world that does that. It's they've taken everything aside. They respect one another, and they move on to the next round, and they keep going until they actually get to that point. And for them, a season's not complete until they lift that cup. And to be part of that, I mean, that's incredible, and I'm sure every player has a different story of it. Our viewpoint as the cup keepers is kind of different, but we see it pretty close and personal.
And we are speaking with Phil Pritchard. He is the keeper of the Stanley Cup, one of the keepers, I should say. He works for the National Hockey League. He is also the man everybody knows with the white gloves and the flowing locks, the salad, as we like to say, bringing his game to the next level. Can you hang for a break? And when we come back, if you can, it would be great to talk about some of the stories that you've had going to all of these countries with all of these players.
Sure. Yeah, no problem.
Awesome. Thank you. Phil Pritchard back out around the bend. This is Radioactive Sports on 105, The Ticket.
Back to Radioactive Sports. The superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
I want to be Phil Pritchard, keeper of the Stanley Cup. Living life without a downside, watching all those faces light up. He's got shiny white gloves and really cool hair. Hard as no saw till Phil gets there. I wanna be
Radioactive Sports
pitcher.
Continues.
I wanna be keeper of
that song. Written by a close personal friend of mine, and Phil Pritchard is who that is about, and he joins us here on Radioactive Sports. Pete Wagner in for Mike Morris, and Phil, now you've got songs written about you.
You know what? I just go along for the ride with the Stanley Cup, and it is one heck of a ride.
Well, you know, but that's what makes you so cool, because it's like, you know, you respect what's going on with that thing, and it's all about respecting that in the game. And I mean, there's so many things to this, that just the history of just the original, the top part, the cup itself from Lord Stanley of Preston, like how that whole thing evolved. Do you have to share those stories about how that, if you ever do you do speaking engagements on that? I'm assuming
Yeah, we do. And you're right. I mean, you hit it right on. The tradition of hockey is unbelievable. The National Hockey League is going to be 100 years old in a couple of years. It's as strong as ever. But what's amazing about it is that trophy that they play for. It's Lord Stanley's Cup, the Stanley Cup, whatever you want to call it. It is the greatest trophy there is. And every time we're out in the road on it, you look at the names on it and you think back to some of these games and these players and some of the great moments in hockey, and it's all right there on the Stanley Cup. And to have it as kind of a travel partner, it's pretty good, because it doesn't really talk back ever. So I can just kind of check out everything that's going on in the Cup, see the whole history of hockey kind of unfold right in front of me.
So you've been to Minnesota with it once in a Stanley Cup final when Pittsburgh won in 91.
Yeah.
I was in the stands and just bitter. I was just, but you know, it was one of those things where the grind, it was just so obvious when it was 7-2 or whatever, and it fell apart. And the North Stars at that point were having a legitimate shot at, you know, when they're in Pittsburgh, they're up 2-1 at some juncture in the series. But anyway, needless to say, I there was no way I was leaving that building, because I needed to see it come out. I hadn't seen it until then. I think it was at remember the L'Hôtel Sofitel? I don't know if you recall.
Yeah.
So I showed up there and I looked at it, and I, you know, the music was going in the aura. But you know what struck me? And I wonder if you hear this. I thought it would be the size of a refrigerator, because it was so iconic in my mind. I was like, wow, that thing's smaller than I thought. Do you ever hear that?
Hey, you know what? We probably won't top three statements it is. It's smaller than it looks. And it's amazing when people say that, because they have this big illusion. And I think that's what makes it neat, though. It's the whole illusion of what it is and what it represents. It means so much. And you talked about that Pittsburgh-Minnesota series. I remember back then. The fans got to see us. At that time, we used to push the cup out on a table.
Yes.
And push it to center ice and wait till the TV came back, and then they do the presentation. I think that was with John Ziegler, actually.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So then when Commissioner Bettman kind of came into the NHL, he wanted to make hockey into like a TV production. He wanted the red carpet treatment, the Oscar type of moment type of thing. And we started, I remember on the conference call we had, we started talking about the red carpet and how do we make it better. And we started talking about our white gloves that we were in the museum, and he loved that idea. And we had told him that all museums wear white gloves. That's what you handle things that you care about, things that have tradition. And he said, let's bring it. Let's get matching suits. Let's make it work. And it kind of, 94 was the first time we walked it out on the center ice, Madison Square Garden. It was incredible. I remember walking out shaking, and all I could think of is don't step on a TV
wire,
but it was unbelievable, and it's unbelievable every time we do it.
So you've been to Minnesota quite a few times with players, obviously. I'm sure there's been plenty that have won it. Do you have a sense or a feel? I mean, I think this place would go absolutely berserk if the Wild ever won the Stanley Cup. And you know, I don't know if we would have been able to say that about the North Stars in the 70s, but today the passion here grows about as deep as it's almost another province of Canada is what I always say. And I think that's a fair statement. But have you found buildings that have been more electric than others when you've delivered the Cup?
Oh, for sure.
What are your top five?
You talk about Minnesota there for a second. I mean, the state of hockey. You look at hockey in Minnesota. High school hockey is huge. College hockey is huge. NHL is huge. There's not very many places that can say that would sell out an arena for a high school championship.
And set a record.
Exactly. So, and when you talk about Minnesota fans, you talk about passion. The North Stars were unique. I mean, unfortunately, the team moved, but they got them back, and the fans were just behind them as just as much, and now they've advanced to the second round. they're going to have a hard go at it. But, hey, it's they're down to eight teams now. Anything can happen, as we've seen in the Stanley Cup before. And it's always amazing whether we're in Minnesota for a charity event or for a guy's day with a cup. The fans there are always appreciated. They're always passionate, and they're knowledgeable.
Radioactive Sports continues with Phil Pritchard. He's a keeper of the Stanley Cup of the National Hockey League. Usually out of the Hall of Fame, which is what I understand where it's located. And then you travel throughout the world. Oh, I was going to ask you, can you give me your top three buildings as far as like just losing it when a team won the cup in
wow.
your career?
I think Madison Square Garden in 94 when it was the first time on the red carpet. That was unbelievable. I think Boston, Chicago a few years ago. If you remember, Boston was up with like a minute left or something.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was incredible. The whole feeling in there was amazing. And I remember when Dallas beat Buffalo in 99
yes.
in Buffalo. The hockey fans in Buffalo are, I mean, there was a ton of Canadian fans there. There was a ton of Sabre fans. There was a ton of hockey fans. But that went into overtime. That was pretty magical as well. But I think every time it happens, and I hate to pick one over the other, it's pretty amazing. And it's another chapter in the story of the Stanley Cup to be. So all of them are great, and all of the fans. I remember when Washington lost four straight to Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
The fans, they were unbelievable. The Capitol fans, they couldn't believe, first of all, that they were going to go out in four straight. And I remember talking to fans and say, you could see a Stanley Cup presentation. Like, you've got the best of both worlds. Your team could win and move on, or you're going to see a Stanley Cup. And they got it. And it was cool. And to talk hockey with people, the passionate ones and the traditional ones, it's amazing.
Do you travel the world with this thing now when the players get the cup?
Yeah, you know what? We were doing a count a while ago because we're always updating our stats and everything. I think we've been to 24 countries with the Stanley Cup now.
Wow. You're the one you wanted to run out of the fastest and the one you love to go to again.
All right, let's see. I'd go to Finland every year if I could.
Why?
Great people. Great place. It's 24 hours sunlight in the summer.
Nice.
It's a party all the time. Ones I want to get out of the fastest. Wow. You know what? I'm not sure if there is because they all have their different cultures. It's hard because the food is different. The languages are tough. I don't know if I want to get out of there faster. I'd like to be in some places more so I
sure.
can understand the language and food. So I'm going to save that question.
Okay, no, that's
but
fair.
We haven't been to Bora Bora or Fiji yet. We need a player from there.
Okay, so, well, you know what? Give it about 15 years and it'll probably happen. So then the players, I heard a story that Pat Verbeek took it when he won in Dallas, that he took it to church. Is that true?
Yeah. There's been a couple of guys, actually, that's taken it to church. And they've taken it to all different places. I mean, we've been to sauna parties in Finland. We've been mountain climbing. We've been to christenings, like we were just talking about with church. We've been out for breakfast with it. And people on the outside think, why do they do that? But when you get to know the person and the family and where they're from, it means so much to them, and it all makes sense.
It totally does. And then it's funny, though, when you bring it somewhere with someone and they go to their important watering holes or
yeah.
their school or their church or the rink that they played at as a kid or whatever it would be, what you learn is what I think I've learned from what I've seen is that it doesn't matter if you get it, you suddenly get it as a viewer.
Exactly. You are so right. The guys know they haven't got there without help from family, friends, and all of that. And on their day, they want to thank them. So we'd be driving along, for example, and they'd say, hang on, we just got to stop here. And he'd walk up to the door, knock on the door with a cup in the hand, and say, hi, Mr. Whatever Smith, you remember me? I just want to say thanks. And it's unbelievable at that moment, or when they're going by a cemetery and they got to stop because they remember somebody.
Mm-hmm.
The emotions that go on that day are unbelievable. I think, though, when they're thrilled to see us show up first thing in the morning, but last thing at night when we're leaving, I think they're just as thrilled to see us go because the focus has been on them all day.
Yeah.
And they're a team player. They don't like the focus on them. They want it on their team. And I think a whole day of focus on them, they're ready for a break.
Well, it's almost like a wedding day, you know.
Yeah,
it's just
exactly.
Like you're like at these big banquets and things. Wow, the keeper of the Stanley Cup, Phil Pritchard, thanks for joining us here tonight. It was outstanding.
No problem. Let's keep in touch. You in the playoffs.
Hey,
who knows?
For sure.
Might
yeah.
see you soon.
I'm going to come down and say thank you. This place will go bananas, I promise you. And you know what? I know there's a lot of people listening right now that would love for nothing more than to see you bringing it out onto XL Energy Center ice for the right team.
Well, hey, how about this? Come June, we're going to present it to the winner and hang out with the winners, whoever that may be.
Perfect. Sounds like a plan, and everybody will love it either way.
Yeah.
Phil,
all right,
thank you so much. Take care.
Great talking to you.
Likewise,
bye-bye.
Thanks. Phil Pritchard, that was outstanding stuff. I think we could have probably wrapped on for probably another hour and a half, but we have to stay to our time constraints. Radioactive Sports continues. We'll come back with the sillier side of sports right after this.
Back to Superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson on 105 The Ticket.
Absolutely 3 hours of radio bliss. Radioactive Sports continues. Standing in for Mike Morris, I'm Pete Wagner. Ben Holson's along with us right now. And we've come to that part of the program called the sillier side of sports. And there's a couple of interesting things to bring to note. By the way, what a show we had here today. Phil Pritchard, keeper of the Stanley Cup, if you were with us when we had him on moments ago, there were some nuggets in there that I'm going to certainly try to get onto our On the Ice radio show coming up this Saturday. By the way, don't forget to check that out as we will be talking about the Wild and Blackhawks Game 1, which will be in the books from Friday night. So there'll be plenty to talk about there. And then, of course, right after that, it's On Deck Radio. Gene Larkin will be up in Collegeville at St. John's as his son will be participating in Senior Day, so he'll be on the phone. Al Newman will be in studio for On Deck Radio, as we'll have those two fine, fine programs coming up for you this Saturday. On to the topics at hand. No one made a big deal when Patriots quarterback was noticeably absent from the team's White House visit last week. The excuse was put out there that Brady had prior family commitments and prevented him from attending. However, Tom Brady actually was at Gillette Stadium for part of the day last Thursday when the team was at the White House. Whatever the family commitment was, Brady had to tend to the obvious and didn't stop him from showing up to work. During the midst of the most talked about Deflategate scandal, the White House press secretary Josh Earnest took a little bit of a shot at the Patriots quarterback after Brady's press conference about the situation. Here's what he said, quote, "For years, it's been clear that there's no risk that I was going to take Tom Brady's job as quarterback of the New England Patriots," Earnest said after Brady's widely panned performance. "But I can tell you, as of today, it's pretty clear that there's no risk of him taking my job either." Wow, a shot from the press secretary. Brady may indeed be bitter at the current office and chose to snub their visit, as several media outlets seem to be implying. It probably didn't help that President Obama also made Deflategate a joke at the visit as well. So there's obviously a little bit of tension. So, of course, we are going to be looking in on that one. Interesting story here in Baltimore. The Orioles have canceled their second straight game tonight. Of course, last night's as well, due to the riots in Baltimore. The Orioles advised fans to keep their tickets and parking passes until more information is released for a makeup. The Ravens have canceled their draft party this week out of respect for the curfew in the city. And also, Ben had talked to one of the correspondents in the city tomorrow for tomorrow's big mock draft here on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket's Radioactive Sports. And they will be calling in from the front lines. They are not going to back down, and they're going to be here for that mock draft, which is refreshing and good to know. If you're ever worried about Roger Goodell not making enough money, check this out. IRS filings have been made public. They show that he's made over $150 million during the first 8 years of his tenure. Here's Goodell's money by the year. He made $4.5 million in 2006, $5.9 million in 2007, $9.8 million in 2008, just a little bitty of a raise in 2009 at $9.9 million. He was good for $11.6 million in 2010, $29.5 million in 11. Boy, things are going well there. $44.2 million in 12 and $35 million in 2013. Must be rough being him. I mean, he's probably making as much, if not more, than anybody in the league. That's kind of the scary part there, is he's not even taking a hit out there. So not bad for him. $150 million in his first 8 years as tenure of the NFL commissioner. And I'll tell you what, that is a job that I don't know I would really particularly want with all of the things that he has to deal with from the police blotter to everything else. It's a job that he can have from this perspective, at least, to say the least. Twins are in action tonight as they're going to be taking on the Detroit Tigers. It's going to be Mike Palfrey looking for his second win on the season. He's 1-0 and has a 2.65 ERA. Anibal Sanchez is the weak link in the Detroit Tigers pitching staff. He's 1-2 with a 5.96 ERA. The Twins fell to the Tigers last night by a score of 5-4. An interesting game in that one is Tommy Malone went four innings. He gave up four runs in the first inning. It was an absolute rocket of a home run that he gave up to Sanchez, I believe it was. And then, of course, it was a three-run bomb to Cespedes as well. He had walked a runner, and it's 4-0. Twins scraped back, though. They ended up having the tying run on second in the ninth inning, but could not get Joe Mauer home after he had doubled and continues his assault on the double record books. By the way, he passed Kent Herbeck and is now second all-time on the Twins list. That is going to do it here for today's show. Thanks, guys, once again for asking me to come in. I appreciate it. And, of course, at this time of every program, it's time for today's True Superstar. Mike Morris will be back tomorrow with the mock draft with Ben Holson. And, you know, as we play this music, please think of someone close to you that has served this country proudly and keep them in your thoughts and prayers. For everybody that's been a part of this program, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. So long, everybody.
Ticket.